suffering greatly, so it really doesn't look like a positive thing, and it's a good job such a terrible statesperson is there.
All right, very quick on the tweet, Samira.
The first one we have here says, Jared Kushner and his team are hoping to use their dwindling political leverage to advance issues of U.S. interest, with a particular focus on resolving the three-year-old rift between Qatar and its Persian Gulf neighbors. We got another one here as well from a user called Ahmed, who says, Jared Kushner is completely useless as a statesperson. Kushner being in power shows how stupid Trump is. How could you let someone so incompetent do his job? If Trump wants war against Iran, he will lose badly with this team behind him.
All right, quick story there in the United States with the president-elect's woke team.
Well, many people have pointed to this and said this is basically like having, you know, a transgender slave owner running a slave plantation. You know, you're putting this trendy face on a massive war machine which is going around the world and massacring innocent civilians. And there's no real point in having so many women and so many people of color in government if they don't represent the majority views of their communities, their given communities, if you're having such a diverse group of people in there. If they're all carbon copies of Condoleezza Rice, what's the why not just have a whole bunch of old white men in there if all of them think like old white men who are taking money from corporations and pushing for all the lobby interests? Placing in people who just look a certain way doesn't do anything. We saw that Barack Obama, being the first black president, did little to nothing for African Americans. And that should have been an issue that he was at least strong on, but he wasn't. He lied about everything from creating peace with the Palestinians to withdrawing from Iraq, which he didn't do, just like Trump hasn't done.
Indeed, didn't close Guantanamo either, as I recall. Reactions online to this one, Rob?
The first one is we have here is from Rania Khalik, who is a journalist in the United States. She says, Biden putting women in charge of U.S. imperialism is not feminism. It's just putting a female face on the same cruel and destructive policies that impoverish and kill people around the world. We have another one here as well from a Twitter user called Rob, who says, the hollowness of bourgeoisie identity politics harnessed to the war machine.
Right, somebody did their political science degree with that tweet. Robert Inlakesh, we'll leave it there. Thank you so very much. And of course, thank you for staying the course with us.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the programs To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother, I'm Muhammad. And today, I'm going to read to you an aphorism of Imam Ali from Nahjul Balagha. Before that, let's go ahead and listen to the Arabic words, and after that, I'm going to read you the English translation. Stay with us.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام إن هذه القلوب تمل كما تمل الأبدان فابتغوا لها طرائف الحكمة.
Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali alayhi salam, said, "The hearts become tired as the bodies become tired. You should therefore search for beautiful sayings for them to enjoy by way of refreshment."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs To My Brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. One of the great and profound lessons which we learn from Imam Ali's universal persona and his life in general is this concept about sacrifice on the path of Allah and steadfastness on the path of God. We find that throughout his life, Imam Ali alayhi salam sacrificed himself, his life, his wealth, his everything for the sake of Allah, and that he always remained steadfast despite the most difficult of situations. He remained steadfast upon the path of Allah. In one of these stories, we find that Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him, sacrificed his life for the Messenger of Allah by putting on his clothes and lying in his bed on a specific night, which is called Laylat al-Mabit. Now, this Laylat al-Mabit, the night of Mabit, is the night when the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household, left Mecca for Medina in the middle of the night, secretly, away from the eyes, concealed from the eyes of the people of Quraysh. Now, these polytheists, these people who were ascribing partners to Allah, they came in to the Holy Prophet's house and they started to throw stones at Imam Ali's body, thinking that it was the Holy Prophet.
these people of Quraysh on the night of Laylat al-Mabit, about 40 men had gathered together with spears and, according to this narration, with stones, trying to kill the Holy Prophet. And so first, it seems that they threw stones at him. The polytheists kept on throwing stones at Imam Ali. But Imam Ali, he wrapped himself in this garment, in this cloak over his head until the morning, meaning he never stuck his head out or he didn't say anything to make the polytheists or the assassins believe that it wasn't the Holy Prophet. All the way until the morning, when the polytheists found out that they were throwing stones at the wrong person. They cursed at Imam Ali, saying, "Whatever stones we threw at him," he didn't even say a word, other than raising his voice when he was in pain. Hence, it was strange for us, and we did not realize whether it was Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him, or someone else who was lying in his bed. How beautifully Imam Ali alayhi salam sacrificed his life, put his life on the line in order to protect the Holy Messenger, in order to protect Islam, in order to protect the sanctities of Islam. A very, very profound and deep lesson for all of us to think over, sacrificing on the path of Allah and steadfastness on the path of God, brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبيب لها ولا راغي
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, about the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
We invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
And this last will of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Sayyid Razi has included this in the section of Nahl al-Balagha dealing with the letters of Ali, because this was a written document. And this is letter number 47 of Nahjul Balagha. And so this is Mustanat, as we call it. Authentic last will of Amir al-Mu'mineen, which he wanted it to be not only for his family, but for the entire Shia community, even for those who will come in the future. Now he is addressing everyone. Usikuma. Again, singling out his two sons. I advise both of you, wa jamia waladi wa ahli, and all my children and my family, wa man balaghahu kitabi, and whoever to whom my writing reaches. So this was a written, you know, wasiyat of Ali. So it is, Ali is actually talking to each one of us. Don't look at this as history. This is Ali talking to us even after 14 centuries. What is the first thing he says? Usikum bi taqwa Allah. Again, emphasizing the issue of taqwa of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And what is after taqwa? Wa nazm amrikum. It's amazing the way Ali talks about it. He says, after the taqwa and consciousness of Allah, Ali says, I would like to see organization and system in your personal and communal life. Don't be disorganized. Be munazzam. Be organized. And when we want to see organization, where do we see? In the east or in west? And this is where we have to realize Ali is talking about issues which are not only for 1400 years ago, even relevant to our own time. وَصَلَاحِ ذَاتِ بَيْنَكُمْ. And always try to make peace among people of your own in the community. Whenever there is dispute, you should move forward in order to create peace. Why? فَإِنِّي سَمِعْتُ جَدُّكُمَا. Because I have heard your grandfather, addressing Hassan and Hussein here, although the wasiyat is for everyone there, that I have heard your grandfather saying, صَلَاهُ ذَاتِ الْبَيْنِ أَفْضَلُ مِنْ عَمَّةِ الصَّلَاةِ وَالصِّيَامِ. Making peace between two individuals, in the eyes of Allah, has more merit and reward than praying for whole year and fasting for whole year. Look at that one side, the issue of, you know, social harmony. So social and communal organization and harmony and peace in the community.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinde ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech from IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Muhammad Ali Javdan. Please stay tuned.
مناسبت نفوذی که شیطان داره، حرفی که خود شیطان زده، گفته من
Satan cannot affect the people who does everything purely for Allah. This point has been clarified by the late Allama Muhammad Hussein Tabatabai. According to him, the pure men of Allah consider Allah in any moment and second of their lives. These people are the purified ones. They are the people who have nothing except Allah. The pure men of Allah believe that their body, their intellect, their mind, their health, and everything that they have belongs to Allah. According to Allama Tabatabai, Satan cannot reach such group of people.
که امروز این خبیث سه بار به سراغ من آمده بود.
Once my teacher, the late Ayatollah Haqshanas, told me that during a day Satan tried to deceive him three times, and if it was not for the du'as recited in the early mornings, the Satan would be successful in his action. This story about Ayatollah Haqshanas shows the significance of reciting the du'as and supplications, or reciting the zikr, ya fattah, after the prayer. When I asked the Ayatollah, "Sorry, but how Satan wanted to deceive you?" The answer was, "Upon having a scar in my mouth, I visited a doctor, and the doctor, after checking the medical results, told me it could be a type of cancer. Upon hearing this, I, for a short moment, thought about the seriousness of the cancer and forgot Allah." This was when the Satan, through illusion and imagination, wanted to overwhelm me. All of a sudden, I realized that I was thinking about the remedy to my disease in a path different from that of Allah. This is how the great men of Allah, like the late Ayatollah Haqshanas, consider Allah even in their smallest tasks and deeds during life. Thank you. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Color of Islam page, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Muhammad Ali Jafdan. To find out more about this program and our other programs, log on to our website, parstoday.com/enkalavislampage. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
In the limelight.
Pennsylvania's highest court has thrown out a lower court's order that was preventing the state from certifying dozens of contests from the 3rd of November election. In the latest Republican lawsuit attempting to thwart President-elect Joe Biden's victory in the battleground state, the state Supreme Court unanimously threw out the 3-day-old order, saying the underlying lawsuit was filed months after the law allowed for challenges to Pennsylvania's year-old mail-in voting law. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at the British newspaper The Guardian, with the Associated Press contributing to the report. The piece is titled, Pennsylvania Supreme Court Throws Out Republican Bid to Reject 2.5 Million Mail-in Votes. Stay with us for more. Pennsylvania's highest court has thrown out a lower court's order that was preventing the state from certifying dozens of contests from the 3rd of November election. In the latest Republican lawsuit attempting to thwart President-elect Joe Biden's victory in the battleground state, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court unanimously threw out the 3-day-old order, saying the underlying lawsuit was filed months after the law allowed for challenges to Pennsylvania's year-old mail-in voting law. Justices also remarked on the lawsuit's staggering demand that an entire election be overturned retroactively. They have failed to allege that even a single mail-in ballot was fraudulently cast or counted, Justice David Wedge wrote in a concurring opinion. The state's Attorney General, Democrat Josh Shapiro, called the court's decision another win for democracy. The week-old lawsuit, led by Pennsylvania's Republican Congressman Mike Kelly, had challenged the state's mail-in voting law as unconstitutional. As a remedy, Mike Kelly and other Republican plaintiffs had sought to either throw out the 2.5 million mail-in ballots submitted under the law, most of them by Democrats, or to wipe out the election results and direct the state's Republican-controlled legislature to pick Pennsylvania's presidential electors. The request for the state's lawmakers to pick Pennsylvania's presidential electors also flies in the face of a nearly century-old state law, which grants the power to pick electors to the state's popular vote, Justice Wedge wrote. Whilst the High Court's two Republicans joined the 5 Democrats in opposing those remedies, they split from Democrats in suggesting that the lawsuit's underlying claims that the state's mail-in voting law might violate the Constitution are worth considering. On Wednesday, Commonwealth Court Judge Patricia McCullough, elected as a Republican in 2009, had issued the order to halt certification of any remaining contests, including apparently contests for Congress. A day earlier, Democratic Governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf, said he had certified Joe Biden as the winner of the presidential election in Pennsylvania. Biden beat President Donald Trump by more than 80,000 votes in Pennsylvania, a state Donald Trump had won back in 2016. Democratic Governor Tom Wolf had appealed Justice McCulloch's decision to the state Supreme Court, saying there was no conceivable justification for it. The defeat followed Friday's decision by a federal appeals court to dismiss a separate challenge to the Pennsylvania result and back a district judge who likened the president's evidence-free and error-strewn lawsuit to Frankenstein's monster. The three-member federal panel confirmed unanimously a lower court's decision last week to rebuff the argument made by Donald Trump's legal team, led by former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, that voting in Pennsylvania was marred by widespread fraud. Free, fair elections are the lifeblood of our democracy. Charges of unfairness are serious, but calling an election unfair does not make it so. Charges require specific allegations, and then they require proof. We have neither here, Judge Stefanos Bibas wrote for the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. The judge denounced as breathtaking a Republican request to reverse certification of the vote, adding, "Voters, not lawyers, choose the president. Ballots, not briefs, decide elections. The campaign's claims have no merit whatsoever." The ruling, which was the Trump team's 38th court defeat in election lawsuits nationwide, reaffirmed U.S. District Judge Matthew Brand's earlier view of Giuliani's complaint, delivered after he listened to 5 hours of oral arguments last week. The lawsuit, Judge Matthew Brand said, was like Frankenstein's monster, haphazardly stitched together. Meanwhile, a Donald Trump supporter who donated $2.5 million to help expose and prosecute claims of fraud in the presidential election wants his money back after what he says are disappointing results. Frederick Eshelman, a businessman from North Carolina and a Trump supporter, said he gave the money to True the Vote, a pro-Trump election ethics group in Texas that promised to file lawsuits in 7 swing states, as part of its push to investigate, litigate, and expose suspected illegal balloting and fraud in the 2020 general election. But according to a lawsuit businessman Eshelman filed this week in Houston, Texas, True the Vote dropped its legal actions and discontinued its Validate the Vote 2020 campaign, then refused to return his calls when he demanded an explanation. The founder of Eshelman Ventures, a venture capital company, said he asked regularly and repeatedly for updates, the lawsuit asserts, but that his requests were consistently met with vague responses, platitudes, and empty promises. The lack of success of True the Vote's efforts to challenge the outcome appears to mirror that of President Donald Trump himself, whose team has lost 38 court actions since the 3rd of November presidential election, most recently in Pennsylvania, where the federal appeals court panel blasted Trump's legal team for filing a case with no merit.
This is A to Z. An Introduction to Islamic Lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, the reality of unity and divine justice. The principle of God's existence is clear and manifest for us, and any particle from particles of this world points to His dignity, power, knowledge, and ability. On the other hand, the reality of His existence is hidden from us because He is an infinite existence and beyond our understanding. So we should consider His essence to be beyond whatsoever we may imagine. And this is the reality of unity. Events occur in the world whose underlying mystery is not always known to us. Belief in God's justice says to us that all of these events are backed by sound reasons, and any suspicion in this regard is not in conformity with belief in His justice and wisdom. So, we think that we know our Creator. We think that we have the ma'rifah of our Creator, the in-depth recognition of our Creator. Well, know that that unity is not that simple for us to understand. Not that it cannot be understood at all. No, it can. But we need to know that our intellect has limitations, whereas the existence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is unlimited. So, the limited being, which is our intellect, cannot really comprehend the infinite being, which is the existence of Allah. That said, we still can attain a good level of understanding and recognition of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is expected from all of us. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the reality of unity of Allah and His divine justice. Well, Imam Ali alayhi salam has said, reality of unity of Allah indicates that one shall not define His essence according to one's imaginations, and belief in His justice infers that one shall not accuse Him in any work. Brothers and sisters, can the human mind comprehend the reality of Allah's essence? Does the human brain possess the ability to fathom the reality of Allah's essence? Well, Allah's essence is beyond whatsoever we may imagine, and this is the reality of unity. Accusing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in any form and shape implies that His wisdom and justice is being challenged. And hence, once we accept that He is the One and we consider His actions to be perfect, there is no room left for any disobedience. So I know it's a little heavy concept for us to digest, but understand and realize this, that Allah is just, Allah is wise, Allah doesn't do any oppression. Once we get to the logical proof of these concepts, there is no room left for anyone to challenge Allah's authority, Allah's justice. Okay? These need to be proven first, and once we get to the proof of these concepts, we understand that Allah is the only just being. He is the Adil, Adil Mutlak, right? So this is what the message of today's lesson was. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parsetoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight.
The incoming U.S. administration is facing a major test of transparency and ethics after the New York Times reported on Saturday, November 28, that three former government officials tapped to run Joe Biden's national security team have been stakeholders at a private equity firm which is promising investors big profits off government business because of its ties to those officials. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by the staff of Common Dreams website, published under the heading, The Revolving Door, Biden's National Security Nominees Want Back In After Cashing Out of Government Service. Here's the details of this article. The incoming U.S. administration is facing a major test of transparency and ethics after the New York Times reported on Saturday, November 28, that three former government officials tapped to run Joe Biden's national security team have been stakeholders at a private equity firm which is promising investors big profits of government business because of its ties to those officials. Pine Island Capital Partners lists former Undersecretary of Defense Michael Flournoy and retired General Lloyd Austin as DC partners in the firm, and this former Deputy Secretary of State Tony Blinken as DC partner on leave of absence. Blinken, together with Flournoy, also founded West Exit Advisors, a strategic advisory firm that doesn't disclose its clients after leaving the Obama administration and ahead of Biden's 2020 campaign. Good government advocates have raised questions about the structure of the organization, which, unlike lobbying shops, does not have to register with the government. Flournoy and Austin are reportedly among the leading candidates being considered for Secretary of Defense, and Blinken is Biden's designated nominee for Secretary of State. Pine Island's chairman is John Tain, the former top executive at Merrill Lynch when the company paid out huge executive bonuses as it began to collapse during the financial crisis. The New York Times reports, the consulting firm West Exit Advisors, and the investment fund Pine Island Capital Partners call themselves strategic partners and have featured on overlapping roster of politically connected officials, including some of the most prominent names on President-elect Joseph R. Biden Jr.'s team and others under consideration for high-ranking posts. Now, the Biden team's links to these entities are presenting the incoming administration with its first test of transparency and ethics. The two firms are examples of how former officials leverage their expertise, connections, and access on behalf of corporations and other interests without, in some cases, disclosing details about their work, including the names of the clients or what they are paid. And when those officials cycle back into government positions as Democrats affiliated with West Exit and Pine Island are now, they bring with them questions about whether they might favor or give special access to the companies they had worked with in the private sector. Those questions do not go away. Ethics experts say just because the officials cut their ties to their firms and clients, as the Biden transition team says, it nominees will do. West Exit founder include Antony J. Blinken, Mr. Biden's choice to be his Secretary of State, and Michelle A. Flourney, one of the leading candidates to be his Defense Secretary. Among others to come out of West Exit are Avril Haines, Biden's pick to be Director of National Intelligence, Christina Killingsworth, who is helping the President-elect organize his White House Budget Office, Ely Ratner, who is helping organize the Biden transition at the Pentagon, and Jennifer Psaki, an advisor on Biden's transition team. After the story in the Times, the Daily Poster's David Sirota reported, in Securities and Exchange Commission filings, Pine Island describes one of its investment vehicles as a newly organized blank check company incorporated in Delaware that will use its connections to top officials to take advantage of rising government expenditures on the national security agencies that Flourney and Blinken could oversee. Pine Island's first filings about the investment vehicle were made in September, the same month Biden suggested that he will not push for significant reductions in Pentagon expenditures, which have reached record levels. This is so explicit that it's astonishing Pine Island even put it on the paper, said David Siegel of Demand Progress, a grassroots group pressing Biden to reject cabinet appointments tied to corporations. This is not an example of people who happen to work at a big company. These are partners at a firm whose stated business model is to profit from the revolving door and connections gained from time in government. Flourney would become the first woman to lead the Department of Defense. She represents the epitome of what is worst about the Washington Bluff, the military-industrial complex revolving door, says Codebeam co-founder Media Benjamin. Her whole history has been one of going in and out of the Pentagon, where she supported every war that the U.S. engaged in and supported increases in military budget. According to an article in the American Prospect titled How Biden's Foreign Policy Team Got Rich, published in July, Flourney could carry her own private practice, but she didn't want a firm with her name on it alone. The trio reached out to defense and intelligence honchos, but with no luck. Then, a particular Washington fixture came to light. He had been Vice President Joe Biden's right-hand man for almost two decades and finished out the Obama administration as Deputy Secretary of State. He was known for his unimpeachable ethics. Having written Biden's speeches for years, he had started to enunciate with Vice President's drawl when he appeared on CNN. He had never cashed in on his international connections, years of FaceTime with Saudi and the Zionist regime leaders. His name was Tony Blinken. With his commitment to join Flarney as a founding partner, a new strategic consultancy was born. They called it West Exit Advisors. West Executive Avenue runs along the west wing of the White House, the connection between presidential power and the offices where aides sit and do the real work. The name West Exit Advisors trades on its founder's recent knowledge of the highest echelons of decision-making. It also suggests they will be walking down the West Exit toward 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue someday soon.
Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, a leading nuclear scientist, was assassinated in a terrorist attack on Friday. Iran's defense ministry said the top scientist was seriously wounded after attackers targeted his car and exchanged fire with his bodyguards in the town of Absart to the east of capital Tehran. Fakhrizadeh later died from his injuries in hospital. Fakhrizadeh was Iran's most renowned nuclear scientist who headed the Ministry of Defense's Research and Innovation Organization. His assassination prompted outrage in the country, with officials blaming Israel for the terrorist attacks and pledging retaliation. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, called for those involved in the assassination of Fakhrizadeh to be brought to justice.
It is evident terrorism has targeted the scientific progress of the Islamic world in general and the Islamic Republic in particular. The first and foremost reason for this hostility is our development, is our progress, is our self-sufficiency, is the strength of our fists at this very moment as we shout out loud what is just and inflict upon them the truth.
And Iranian President Hassan Rouhani called Fakhrizadeh's assassination a proof of enemies' desperation.
This terrorist act indicates the enemy's failures in political fronts in the region as well as across the world. The assassination of the scientist suggests the extent of enemies' malice and garage toward Iran's scientific capabilities and achievements. The killing of figures like Fakhrizadeh will not weaken Iran's will to move toward scientific development and progress. Rather, it makes Iranians more resolute in their path.
Fakhrizadeh's name was specifically mentioned in Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's presentation about Iran's nuclear program in April 2018. At the time, Netanyahu said he identified Fakhrizadeh as the head scientist in the program and urged people to remember that name.
A key part of the plan was to form new organizations to continue the work. This is how Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, head of Project Ahmad, put it. Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
The Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said there are, quote, serious indications of an Israeli role in the assassination. He urged the international community, especially the European Union, to end, quote, their shameful double standards and condemn the assassination of the nuclear scientist. Zarif was referring to a trial in Belgium where four Iranian diplomats were accused of plotting a bomb attack in Paris. One of the latest projects that Fakhrizadeh was involved in was the development of the first indigenous COVID-19 test kit. U.S. sanctions prevent Iran from accessing medicine and humanitarian goods during this pandemic. The top scientist was also supervising the development of a COVID-19 vaccine. Four other Iranian nuclear scientists were assassinated between 2010 and 2012, with Tehran and Western intelligence agencies blaming Israel for those killings. The Israeli terror campaign has been widely seen as a project to stymie Iran's peaceful nuclear activities, which have been under intense scrutiny of the United Nations Nuclear Agency.
Zionism, imperialism, the whole Western blood-soaked empires that assassinate, that murder, bomb, and displace, and then justify their crimes through propaganda, just like they did throughout the colonization epoch. Where what I believe is that wherever in the world there is oppression, there will be a struggle. And wherever in the world there is a struggle, we shall be there. And if they think that they are threatened, well, because they are the oppressors.
This assassination follows a not-so-secret meeting in Saudi Arabia between the Saudi foreign minister and Israeli prime minister last week. It sent another signal that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and Benjamin Netanyahu see this window as their last best chance in a while to try to inflict a crippling blow on Iran. Experts believe Riyadh and Tel Aviv are seeking to complicate an already challenging course for a new U.S. team to re-engage with Iran. The U.S. President Donald Trump abandoned the 2015 Iran deal in 2018. Since then, Washington carried out what it called a maximum pressure campaign against Iran and imposed massive sanctions against the country. But future President of the United States, Joe Biden, has pledged to re-engage with Iran when he becomes U.S. President in January, despite long-standing opposition from Israel.
Up until now, the EU have played the winning hand on every account as they face off with the British over a post-Brexit trade deal. Yet as the deadline fast approaches for the British to beg the EU to adhere to some kind of trade rules, desperate measures may be taken in the 11th hour of the negotiations. With many of the big players in the EU very much in favour of the bloc, the French have urged the EU chief negotiator, Michel Barnier, to remain firm and stick to the plan, compelling him to stay tough on the approach the EU takes with the British. The Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, recently stated that any deal is now down to the friends and partners of the EU. Yet the message Boris Johnson must understand is that the very best deal he can expect to get would still have to be less favourable than the worst conditions of staying in the EU. Otherwise, what's the point of having an EU? So is this the future that Britain truly wishes to pursue? However, it seems that the EU is fast running out of patience with the British, with Barnier almost calling it a day recently, stating that there was no point negotiating over a lost cause, as it was clear that Britain was in no mood to make any commissions with the EU. Yet it seems that the EU lead has been reassured between the lines by the British chief negotiator, David Frost, that Britain may have no choice but to align to EU requests, much to the distaste of the British. So was the real reason that the EU agreed to more talks is because the British have finally realised that they must secure some kind of deal or face the perils of being a lonely piece of land floating off the coast of Europe with no friends, a shattered economy, and left in a position facing the realisation that the notion of stronger together was coined for the EU for a real good reason. When Dominic Cummings left Downing Street with his tail between his legs, there was an air of celebration in the UK, as many people finally saw the back of a man who masterminded Brexit, yet on the other hand, breached the travel rules during the lockdown, making him public enemy number one. Yet with Cummings now gone, could this be an excuse for Boris Johnson to change his stance when it comes to negotiating with Europe, using